really belong to 1 Chronicles 19. It ends the story of the Ammonite-Amorite conflict that happened with Israel. Quick recap on that. The Ammonites decided to cause massive amounts of humiliation to David's men while David was trying to do a kind thing by encouraging the Ammonite leader at the death of his father. And so the Israelites reach out in love, and they get not only their hand slapped, but they get humiliated. And it's really a tragic story. The Ammonites then decide to, because they found out that David was upset by this, instead of doing the right thing, which is going and apologizing and saying that they were sorry, they doubled down. And they sent troops in, and they attacked. They also then hired mercenaries from the northeast, the Amorites. So you got these two groups of people coming in to fight the Israelite nation. The Israelites are able to push them back. And not even that, they actually have a complete routing of the people. So the Amorites, they turn and run. They call in extra ground support. The ground support shows up, and that group is also turned away by the Israelites. The Ammonites then hold up in their capital city, Rabbah, which is just east of the Israelite territory. And so this is the end of the story. Israel's taking care of the Amorites. They've left. They've gone. The Ammonites have gone into hiding, and this is the end of that story. In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, Joab led out the armed forces. He laid waste the land of the Ammonites and went to Rabbah and besieged it. But David remained in Jerusalem. Quick side note, a huge story is then omitted from the lessons. It all starts, if you know the phraseology, it starts off when the kings go off to war, which is the springtime, and Joab goes out, and David decides to stay back. That was his downfall. He ended up hanging out at his palace, bored, and he's looking over, and there's this beautiful woman, and she's out on her patio, and she is not wearing much clothing, and David summons her, and we have the horrible David and Bathsheba story. It is an interesting thing to note, and it will be for this as well. The David and Bathsheba story is the turning point in David's career. You can track it that David, there's this rise that he has, and then there is a huge fall, and David really never recovers from it. Which, again, you can create a whole sermon just on that point alone. Sometimes we allow a huge failure in our life to become the downfall of our life. It doesn't have to be that way. David allowed it. And as you then track some of the difficulties David had with his kids, every single one of the problems he had with his kids happened to revolve around the subject of sexuality. And what David ends up doing is, because he sinned and fell in sexuality, he never had the ability to talk to his kids properly about how to live proper, honorable, God-fearing lives. So it's really a cautionary tale for us. The chronicler omits it, not because I think the chronicler is trying to hide anything. 1 Samuel is very well known. It's a story that everyone would have been aware of. But again, that's not the purpose of the chronicler. The purpose of the chronicler, remember, is as they're rebuilding the temple, as they're back in the land, they need to know, is God done with us? And they need to be reassured that even in the midst of poor choices, God still makes a promise, I'm there for you. Do we sometimes suffer discipline and consequences because of our poor choices? Sure. But God says, I'm not going to abandon you because of that. So as they're coming back in the land wondering, is God going to be with us? The chronicler is laying it out. Yes, look at this. This happened, and God was with them. This happened, God was with them. The Ammonites came in, God was with them. The Amorites came in, God was with them. And then it's going to turn quickly to the story of the Philistines. So you got everyone on the east side is attacking, and now he's got to deal with the west side, which is about the Philistines. So don't think that the chronicler is trying to hide something, but this is unfortunately where David makes a critical mistake. And I am also going to posit the theory that this is not David's worst mistake. Now, what he did was really bad in a lot of ways. Committing adultery, getting Bathsheba's husband killed, lying, trying to hide it from God. These are all very serious sins. In chapter 21, David is going to commit an even worse sin that has huge ramifications and actually results in the death of thousands of people because of a sin that is, I think, even more heinous than adultery. And you have to come next week to find out what that sin is. Hopefully, maybe you know the story already. So, David remains in Jerusalem. And I'm in the last part of verse 1. Joab attacked Rabbah and left it in ruins. It's always hard how much you spiritualize these stories, but I think it's a relatively true axiom that those who are bent on destruction and humiliation of other people will one day face that exact thing back on them. I mean, Jesus says this in the garden, he who lives by the sword will ultimately die by the sword. If you live a life that's filled with violence, eventually violence will catch up to you and you will suffer at those hands. If you live a life that is filled with deception of other people, there will come a day when you are ultimately deceived. And here we're going to see humiliation heaped back on the very people who humiliated God's people. And this is how it happened. Verse 2, David took the crown from the head of their king. Its weight was found to be a talent of gold. Does anyone know how much a talent of gold is? 75 pounds, according to our text note. Don't worry, I always have to look it up too. I'm like, what is a talent? Oh, there in my text note. It says that is about 75 pounds. Could you imagine a 75-pound hat? Yeah. I don't know how often this man wore it. It was probably just more symbolic. But they take that, and it was set with precious stones and was placed on David's head. He took a great quantity of plunder from the city and brought out the people who were there, consigning them to labor with saws and with iron picks and axes. David did this to all the Ammonite towns. Then David and his entire army returned to Jerusalem. And again, the interesting thing is David doesn't slip into the really difficult trap of seeking revenge. I know if I were king and all my people were humiliated at the hands of these people I just conquered, my temptation would be, let me humiliate them back. He doesn't. He consigns them to hard work, but this would be typical of what happens back in that time period. So David doesn't go after them per se, but it still remains a really humiliating thing that takes place. Then we have the war with the Philistines. So you've got the east side is conquered. Now you got the west side, which is the coast. The problem with Israel is when they had moved in, they were almost surrounded by difficult tribes and peoples, and ended up being landlocked and sea locked. They couldn't get certain ports because the Philistines had charge of that, and so they were always at war with the Philistines, who were always trying to expand their territory. So, in the course of time, war broke out with the Philistines at Gezer. At that time, Sibekai the Hushathite killed Sippai, one of the descendants of the Rephaites, and the Philistines were subjugated. In another battle with the Philistines, Elhanan, son of Jair, killed Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, who had a spear with a shaft like weaver's rod. Now this is very interesting stuff with the battles that took place. With the Philistines, the way they did warfare was not all-out warfare, let's draw up the battle lines. It was always hero versus hero. They would take the best and strongest person they had, and they would say, I challenge you to send out your best and strongest person. And then the fight would take place, and whoever won that battle essentially won the people with them too. So you really have to have a lot of trust in whoever is going to be the one battling. And so in this particular thing, Elhanan takes out Goliath's brother, and we kind of have the concept that this guy is also a giant. And still another battle, which took place at Gath, there was a huge man with six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. And if you don't know how to add properly, it actually then gives it to you 24 in all. And at this point, Rich Manning is going to talk about... Exactly. If only I had a picture of Count... Wait, what do I have up here? Yes. Ah, Indigo Montoya. Who here has no idea what I'm talking about? Okay. Wait. No, you don't. Be bold, because I want to educate you. So you don't know what I'm talking about? Now everyone's like, okay, yes, I don't know. Be bold. Everyone raise your hand who has no idea what I'm talking about. Raise your hand. Okay. We are going to have a movie night, a Searchlight movie night. And we will watch The Princess Bride. This is, Faith, is this not one of the best movies ever? It's a cult classic, and you don't have, Grandma hasn't watched it. Faith, you need to educate your poor grandmother. And this guy is being hunted by Indigo Montoya because Indigo Montoya's father was killed by a six-fingered man, and this guy has six fingers. How is that possible? Do you know it actually is very possible? Well, I have a picture.
Do you know that it's actually in genetics? Six fingers is actually the dominant
gene. It's the dominant gene. That is absolutely correct. And it does happen. Check out this picture. Yeah, everyone's like, wait a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, it actually is the dominant gene. I wonder if there are good piano players or, I don't know. Ray, do you sometimes say, I really wish I had an extra finger? That would be so nice to just get it out.
Sometimes for two people to sit at the piano, you don't even need the second
person. Right, you don't need the second person. Just, you can do a Heart and Soul all by yourself at that point. You don't need it. Yeah, so, and I don't know... Carson, would that be helpful, a sixth finger on a guitar? Dave, a sixth, yeah. I don't know how that would just be really kind of funky. So we are all, yeah, this is the we are all recessive gene holders. You can go to the black slide now. So this is the six-fingered man, and the idea behind this is these are all giants that are being talked about, and you even... goes verse 7, when he taunted Israel, Jonathan, son of Shimei, David's brother, killed him. And these were descendants of Rapha and Gath, and they fell at the hands of David and his men. Now, of course, this is all supposed to remind the Israelite nation of the biggest battle that took place, the battle of David versus Goliath. And Goliath, anyone remember how tall this dude was? 7 cubits and a span, very good. And how high is 7 cubits and a span? Let's see. About 9 feet tall. Could you imagine that? Joshua, how would you like to be 9 feet tall? I think he's going to be 9 feet tall. That's just my theory on that. I'm so sorry, Molly. I know you wish you had it, but you don't. Yes. Yeah, so the history of where did these giants come from, most will go back to the story in Genesis chapter 6. Genesis 6, which talks about the sons of God having relationships with the daughters of men, and out came this group called the Nephilim, who were supposed to be these giants in the land. Now, the problem that we have there is Genesis 6 happens before Genesis 9, which is the flood. So if the flood happened, then where did these people come from? Most actually do believe that they were descendants of Ham, Shem, and Japheth. But we do know that there were giants in the land. Do you remember when Joshua, the 12 men that went to spy on Canaan, the 10 were bad and 2 were good. What did they see when they spied on Canaan, those 10 that were bad and those 2 were good? Some saw giants big and tall. Yeah, so they walked in, and how did they describe these people? How did they describe themselves in relation to them? Like, we were grasshoppers. Like, they could step on us and squash us. And this was all throughout the land. So there were giants everywhere. So Goliath the Gittite and his brothers were quite normal, you might say, in that particular area. We need giant killers. I am worried that what happens in Christianity is we are shying away from battles that need to be fought in order to stand for truth. And these battles come in many shapes and sizes. Some of them are just popular thoughts. Some of them are new ways of thinking. And this is something that we'll have a kid maybe share next week about what they learned about. But some of our youth went to we called it a VBS for teenagers, and they learned all about this concept called transhumanism. Who here knows what transhumanism is? Besides Emily and Josh and Anna. Right, and if Jacob were here, he would say he would know. This is an up-and-coming thought that we have to start battling, but the problem is we don't even know what the battle is. And so this was a conference where these kids were trained in transhumanism, which is the idea that we should seek infinite life, infinite health, infinite knowledge, and infinite happiness. And we as humans need to become transhumans and seek to shed ourselves from this death body in order to become advanced humans, maybe we would say. As some of the speakers that they talked to, they heard about how people were voluntarily having their arms chopped off because they have new technology that you can get a robotic arm that you could throw a football with pinpoint accuracy and with such strength. You can voluntarily have your eyeball plucked out so that you can have a robotic eye put in so that you could see. And then they started asking questions, things like, well, what happens if this eyeball also had infrared or X-ray abilities? Now we're starting to, these are battles that we're facing. There's battles happening right now for the culture of America. There are battles that are happening of people's lives as they struggle with things happening in them. I think we all know people who are fighting such difficult things personally in their life. We have become a culture that seeks to avoid suffering. Because we avoid suffering, because we avoid conflict, the enemy can stand and taunt us, and essentially there's nothing that we do about it. I think we need some giant killers. I'm really happy that David did what he did, right? I mean, that's a very inspiring story of David killing Goliath. what would have happened if all of David's men said, "Wow, David, you're a great giant killer. The next time we encounter a giant, we're going to call you up and you can come and do battle against the giant." What would eventually happen? David's only one man. There is no way that he's going to be able to just simply do battles against giants for the rest of his life. The better thing, the more effective thing, is for people to see things like David and Goliath, be inspired by these stories, and then rise up and become giant killers yourselves. Instead of looking around and saying, "That person over there has great faith, and boy, they seem to have a great knowledge, I think I'm going to allow them to just simply speak on my behalf." We need more people who are willing to say, "I'll go into battle in order to stand up for what is right." Just so you know what I'm meaning when I talk about battling, I am not talking about actual physical killing people, violence type thing. Are y'all with me? I'm speaking in metaphor. But, you know, in today's age, it seems like you got to make sure you really clear things up and so people understand. You may end up in a battle that you never even wanted. You may end up facing sicknesses where you are unsure of how to proceed because every time it looks like things are going better, things start going worse. This past week, I spoke to a young man who is going through a very difficult time in his life. He's planning to become a pastor. And it's really funny because those who plan to become pastors or religious teachers or youth workers, you could pretty much guarantee they're going to get hit a couple of times. Because Satan is really not interested in just allowing people free passes. And I spoke with this young gentleman. He is a junior going to be a senior in high school, and some of the stuff he's faced as a teenage young man, I am shocked about. The challenges that he has with his biological father, problems he's having with his sister who has gone rebellious, some of the health issues that are going on in his life, breaks my heart. But I know that he is very indicative of what I hear when I talk to other youth, that things are not always easy, are they? Things are hard. Maybe you fight a battle because of your belief system, and when people find out what it is you believe, they go on the offensive against you, and you find yourself in a battle you never thought you were going to be in. Maybe it's something to do with your family. Maybe something's going on and you're now waging war wondering, am I going to make it through this? Because it's really, really hard. Sometimes it's battles in our schools. Sometimes it's battles in our work. We're trying to do the right thing at our job site, but we're constantly being harassed and harangued because of what we believe. There's battles happening all over. And I would love for the church to become giant killers. And the key to becoming a giant killer is to take focus off self. You hear it in these stories here. Every single one of them, I mean, was there wasn't really strategy involved. It didn't describe, oh, when this battle took place, you know, this person fought like this, and because of that gained victory. It just simply said they fought. And if they followed the example of David and Goliath, you'll find out quickly that the example that David set was this. Always remember that it's not about you, it's about the God you serve. When he went up against David, he says, I'm not afraid to fight, when David went up against Goliath, he says, I'm not afraid to fight Goliath because I know that God is with me. And he says, you come against me, but you don't just come against me, you come against the living God. And because of that, he had incredible victory. And when we start mimicking that, when that becomes our lifestyle, you're going to start seeing giants falling. I don't think you're going to see giants falling because of particular strategies. I don't think you're going to see giants falling because people are pounding their chest and screaming on street corners. I don't think you're going to see those types of giants falling that way. I think you're going to see giants falling when people just simply are confident in the God that they serve. They're confident in the power that he gives and just simply operates in that exact same power. When Jesus was with his disciples, Jesus was in the business of things like casting out demons, raising people from the dead, healing blind, healing deaf. And it was very interesting when the time finally came, because these were giants. I mean, the sickness culture that was there was huge. And there came a time when Jesus said, I'm just one guy. There's no way that we're going to be able to get this done this way. So he actually grabbed his disciples and then even grabbed a whole bunch more, and he sent them out and he told them, you're going to have the exact same power I'm going to have. And they're like, what do you mean by that? And he goes, you're going to go out and you're going to cast out demons and you're going to heal the sick and you're going to raise the dead. And when we hear stories like this, imagining yourself in that situation, how many of us would have actually taken Jesus at his face value? I don't know if I would have. And that's why it's so funny when they go out. They actually come back and they start reporting. They're like, Jesus, you won't believe what happened. The demon submitted to us. And I'm sure Jesus is like, that's what I said. That's great for you guys. Good job. They're shocked when they realize that they have the same power and authority that God has. And that's always how we operate. David did not kill Goliath by himself. It was always with God's help. Noah did not survive the flood all by himself. He did it with God's help. The disciples did not cast out demons all by themselves. They did it with God's help. We need more giant killers. And I believe the people that God is looking for is not the particularly strong people. Physically. It's not the ones who are the most